Did you know that Indonesia is an Asian country which consists of over 17,000 islands? It is the world's largest island country. Indonesia also stands as the 14th largest country in terms of area. Indonesia, which is officially known as the Republic of Indonesia, which is in Southeast Asia between India and Pacific Ocean. The name Indonesia is derived from the Latin word Indus, meaning Indian, and the Greek word Nisos, meaning island. Interesting, right? One more worth mentioning interesting fact is that almost everyone in Bali, which is an island in Indonesia, has had their teeth filed down. This practice is rooted in the belief that the six main vices, anger, confusion, jealousy, drunkenness, desire, and greed, all enter the body through the top six teeth. Don't know if this is true, but let me give you a heads up that most people in Indonesia are extremely superstitious. Today's sinner, Ahmad Surajji, was motivated to commit horrific murders due to his unhealthy superstitious belief. So, without any more geography, history, and psychology, let's dive into today's case. It was 27th of April, 1997. A young man was walking through the tall fields of sugarcane after a heavy rainpour on the previous night. The warmth in the climate and the mild whisk of sugarcane in the air of Aman Damai Hamlet were indeed very welcoming. What was not welcoming at all was finding something that looked like a human torso with its head popping out of the ground in the middle of the field. The visual shook the man. Scared, he went rushing out of the field and informed the village head Sujito. He and a few other men went to inspect the spot. They dug the area and had stuck a piece of wood into it, and they were welcomed by a rancid stench of decay. Worried, Sujito had immediately alerted the military, who in return told Sujito to start digging to see what was beneath the dirt. The military told him that if they found a human body, then they should immediately leave it alone and inform them. But if it was just an animal, it was not needed to inform them. Soon, after digging for about 3 hours, a naked, decomposing body was discovered with its hands tied at the back and its throat brutally strangled. It was later identified that the body was of a 21-year-old Sri Kamala Devi. Her family as well as the military were immediately informed. Devi's mother, Arsana, said that she could tell it was her daughter by just looking at her leg. The news broke and it shook the entire village to its core. What was yet to unfold was that Sri Kamala Devi wasn't the only woman to be killed in such a horrific manner. Police investigation commenced and a 15-year-old rickshaw puller, Andreas, reported that the last he saw Sri Kamala Devi alive was 3 days back when he dropped her off at the local sorceress's place. She had specially asked Andreas to keep this as a secret and had informed him to not pick her up. The family had no idea that Devi had made a trip to meet the sorcerer. The police asked for the sorcerer's address. Turns out his house was just in front of the sugarcane field where the body was found. Well, you might be thinking what a sorcerer is. A sorcerer is the one who practices magic or sorcery and is reputed to possess supernatural powers. They are also identified as shamans or datuks. Sorcery, witchcraft, magical beliefs, spiritual healing, and practices are a part of everyday life for millions of Indonesians. Belief in sorcery and witchcraft is widespread, not just in rural areas, but also in other sectors of Indonesia. Research indicates that judicial officers, legal experts, and even government authorities of Indonesia believe and fear in sorcery. Now, let's get back to the story. The police visited the sorcerer for a confrontation. The sorcerer was a 48-year-old man named Ahmad Surajji. Ahmad Surajji, who's commonly known as Datuk Maringi, but his real name is Naseeb Kelewang. When interviewed by Tabloid Nova in 1998, Surajji's mother said, when Surajji was a child, he fell into a well. Since then, she called him Naseeb because he managed to survive. Kelewang was obtained because he often carried a kelewang, which is a machete. Ahmad Surajji was born on the 10th of January 1949 in Medan, Indonesia. Surajji was a troubled child, not surprising, as many serial killers have had a traumatic childhood which shaped them to become what they are. Surajji was apparently different as a young boy and had trouble making friends, which is why he was often bullied in school. Lonely and neglected, Surajji did not do well in school and began a life of crime, and was first arrested for theft at the age of 19 and served almost a total of 10 years in prison for committing petty crimes and public violence. Barely 2 years after he was released, Surajji was back behind bars once again, this time for cattle theft. According to a documentary by Crime Investigation Asia, upon his release from prison, Surajji felt that he needed to do something to shed his bad reputation. He did not like the way people looked at him and treated him, so he made the decision to be like his father, a sorcerer. In his testimony, Surajji said, and I quote, "I aspired to follow in the footsteps of my father. I did not learn sorcery from anyone else but my father," end quote. Surajji always looked up to his father. He liked to follow him around and had a very close relationship with his father until his father died when Surajji was in his early adulthood. So began the journey of sorcery for Surajji. He had married three women who were surprisingly all sisters named Tumini, Tumina and Gatia. It was common in Indonesia to have multiple wives but was unusual for all the wives to be related. Surajji, with his three wives and no children, lived just on the outskirts of the Aman Damai village in Sungal district located in Medan, and he worked as a cattle breeder as well as a sorcerer. After marriage, he changed his name from Naseeb to Ahmed Surajji in the hopes that his new name will bring blessings and a better life. He had become a respected and powerful leader and sorcerer of his community. His clients were often women seeking his guidance on how to find good fortune or maintain their beauty or become richer or to cast a spell on their spouses so that they will never have an affair. For his contributions, he was later regarded as Datuk Maringi. Locals believed that he could move clouds and heal the sick, and he could solve all their problems. It was indeed very surprising that even after being to prison so many times and for so many years, Surajji was able to convince his community that he was so reformed and spiritual. They say prison reforms criminal, but it was not at all true in Surajji's case, because in reality, he followed his dark path and went on to become one of the most prolific and hideous mass serial killers of all time. At present, police questioned Ahmed Surajji regarding the killings of Shri Kamala Devi, which he denied any connections with. Although he denied, police, while investigating, found Devi's handbag, dress and her bracelet at his house. Surajji was later arrested on the 30th of April 1997. He went through 4 days of interrogation, during which he slowly confessed to Devi's murder. Surajji said, and I quote, "That night she was scared because we had to walk through a cemetery to get to the sugarcane plantation. I told her it was fine, but she insisted that my wife accompany us for the ritual. Devi was the one who asked for my wife to come along, and that was how my wife got to know about the murders," end quote. Yes, you heard murders, not just one murder. But to know more, we'll have to dig a little deeper, so hold your breath. To get more information regarding this, the police went on with their drilling interrogation, and what Surajji disclosed was bone-chilling. He said, and I quote, "We are all human beings. We all have our strengths and weaknesses. If I remember correctly, I have murdered 42 women. I did not suspect I was going to get caught. I did not try to run away when I saw the police because I had resigned to my fate," end quote. He then went on to explain how he killed his 42 victims and about his bizarre modus operandi. Surajji murdered 42 girls, women and prostitutes between the years 1986 to 1997, and his victims' age ranged between 11 to 30. He never bothered to go out and hunt for his victim, as women would come to him themselves to receive his help for his apparent powers for improving their lives. At times, Surajji even hired prostitutes, then murdered them because he could not wait around for more women to come by. In the guise of the ritual, which he generally conducted at night, Surajji would take his victim to the sugarcane field, which was fairly secluded. He would then dig a waist-deep hole into the ground, which the victims at times dug themselves. It was like literally digging their own grave. Then, as a part of the ritual, he would have the victims bury themselves up to their waist in the freshly dug hole. But this was all a trick, as he would then sit behind them and proceed to strangle them, sometimes with his bare hands and the other times with a cable. Many serial killers do unsettling ritualistic things with their victims, and Surajji's preferred methods were grossly disturbing. He believed that his victim's saliva improved his powers. So immediately after his victim's breathing stopped, he would slurp their saliva. He wasn't very specific about how he drank it, we don't know the details, but either way, he performed this ritual on each and every woman he killed. Meaning, he drank 42 different types of saliva and was planning to slurp up to 70. He then stripped the victims off of their clothes as their body would decompose faster. Then he buried all his victims with their heads facing in the direction of his house, believing that this would grant him stronger powers. In a reenactment with the police, with the whole nation watching through their TV screens, Surajji also showed everyone how he killed his victims. He also added that while murdering Devi, it was the first time that he had brought his first wife Tumini along. He also explained that all three of his wives had not known of his murders up until the discovery of Devi's body. When asked about his motives, everyone was dumbstruck. He claimed that his reason for killing 42 women was because years ago in 1986, his deceased father, who was also a shaman, had come to him in his dream saying that if he successfully drinks the saliva of a total of 70 women, his powers will grow. he would be able to perform stronger acts of magic. He will also become a mystical healer and would become invincible. Although much later, while he was serving his prison sentence, Suraji admitted that his father did not specifically advise him to kill people. He thought it would take ages if he had to wait to get to 70 women, and he was trying to get to it as fast as possible. He used his own initiative to kill. That is why from 1986, he had killed 42 women. In a separate confession, Suraji had also said, and I quote, "Murder was an easy way to make money. If I just robbed people, I could get shot or put in jail. But this way, people came to me. I charged them my fees and took their money and then killed them." End quote. After his capture, local police put word out, asking people to come forward with the names of women missing in the area. Several missing persons reports were filed that revealed that over 80 female villagers had gone missing. However, there was no way to know if they were all murdered by Suraji. Dozens of women went missing in over 11 years, and literally after a decade, missing complaints came into the limelight. Why so? Well, Amandami is a very small village, and record keeping in this small village was not at par. Hence, the missing women as well as the suspicions on Suraji went unnoticed by authority. And above that, it had helped Suraji even more that most of the women who came to him for help had done so in secret. So there was no way of linking him to their disappearances. The military, after his confession, then worked together with the locals to unearth all of the other bodies from the very same field. Satyo, a forensic officer, said that Devi could be identified quite quickly because her body was still fairly fresh. There were four bodies which could not be identified and had to be cremated without anyone claiming them. It was just impossible to recognize them as they had been reduced to a pile of skulls and bones. In fact, it was thought that there is a possibility that more than 42 bodies were there. However, considering the extent of decomposition of these bodies, it was difficult to tell if sexual assault had happened at all. The forensic expert also revealed that Suraji had claimed himself that none of his murders were ever sexually motivated. Ahmed Suraji's trial began on the 11th of December 1997 in Lubuk Pakam District Court in North Sumatra with a 363-page charge sheet against him. People had flocked to watch the trial. Due to the large number of visitors, the local government of Delhi Serdang prepared a large tent and four television monitors for visitors who did not get a seat in the courtroom. The trial was guarded by four platoons of police. According to the head of North Sumatra Police Department, Amreen Karim, said that officers were also prepared in civil clothes in case any member of the public became emotional. Fortunately, those worries did not happen. Suraji maintained his innocence throughout the trial. He rejected the police reports and denied the allegation of killing 42 women and said that he had confessed due to the pressure from the police. All three of his wives were also implicated as accomplices. They too denied the charges and claimed that they had confessed under torture by the police. All of the prosecutor's accusations were considered a big lie, but the judge believed otherwise. The panel of judges chaired by Haogaro Harifa gave a verdict on 27th of April 1998 and sentenced Suraji to death penalty, a punishment which was very rare in Indonesia at that time. This decision was immediately greeted by thunderous applause from the large crowd who packed the courtroom. Meanwhile, Suraji looked calm after the verdict was read. In fact, several times he was caught smiling at the reporters, as if the verdict was not a serious matter. He showed no remorse for his action. The wives were let free except for Tumini, who too went on trial at the same time as her husband. She was sentenced to death for assisting with the murder, but her sentence was later reduced to life imprisonment. Suraji and Tumini were sent to Tanjung Gusta prison in Medan. After entering prison, Ahmed Suraji stopped trying to be a shaman. Instead, he converted to Islam. He started giving religious advice to his fellow prisoners. He was also very popular in prison. On 27th of June 1998, an appeal was made by Suraji to the North Sumatra High Court. However, his appeal was rejected. Likewise, on 27th of September 2000, the appeal made to the Supreme Court was also rejected. On 28th of May 2003, the Supreme Court again rejected Suraji's plea. In August of 2004, Suraji submitted a request for clemency along with other death row inmates to Indonesia's then president Megawati Sukarnoputri. On 22nd of November 2007, 3 years later, Indonesian President Susilo Bambang rejected his plea for clemency. When he was given the news in 2008 that the execution of death penalty would soon be carried out, he was restless and felt pressured. The news made Suraj stressed because he had hoped to be granted clemency by the president, as he believed he had shown good changes in prison. Suraj said, and I quote, "Dark magic comes from God. I don't have it anymore. I have repented. I wish I had a chance to live," end quote. As his execution approached, Suraj submitted a final application to the court. He asked to be given one chance to see his eldest wife, Tumini. The authorities accepted, and he was able to speak to her one last time. On 10th of July 2008, exactly at 10 in the night in a rubber plantation in Galang district, North Sumatra, Suraj, with his hands tied to a tree, was confronted in front of 12 members of the firing squad. Of the 12 rifles held by the 12 executioners, only 3 contained live ammunition, and none of them knew about it. 3 bullets fired from 10 meters away at a speed of 900 meters per second lodged in Ahmed Suraj's left chest while his eyes were closed. These 3 bullets marked the end of Ahmed Suraj's killing spree. 3 bullets that did not stop from his powers. 3 bullets that served the victims' families and Indonesia justice. And with that, we come to an end of today's case. Let me know your thoughts on the saliva slurping serial killer case on Instagram. The handle is Sins of Asia. I hope you found this episode informative. If you did, then please do not forget to give your precious ratings and reviews, as it immensely helps the podcast. And please take a moment to also follow the podcast. New episodes with a fresh sin from Asia will go live every Friday. Thank you so much for hanging out with me. I hope you make good choices and don't become a criminal. Bye guys, and I hope to catch you for the next sin.